Welcome to episode 36 of Leadership Amplified for an insight into the joys of leading. We hear stories of both good and bad leadership. Recently, I saw figures showing that not so many people are interested in either taking on or staying in management roles, which is a real concern. Part of my goal with the podcast is to help people see the pleasures and the opportunities that come from taking on these important roles so that we can hear more of the good stories of leadership. This episode spotlights Chris Pearce, who's the Group Fleet and Asset Manager at Echo Dynamics. Starting out his career in the Army, Chris spent 10 years working as a diesel mechanic in various locations around Australia. From this solid grounding, he went on to work in several leading organisations in the road transport industry. Working in both fleet and commercial workshop roles has allowed Chris to develop a unique understanding of both sides of the transport industry. Working for large fleets such as FedEx and Linfox and commercial trailer manufacturer Maxitrans has helped expose Chris to different styles of leadership. From those experiences, along with a focus on learning and education, Chris has been able to craft a genuine and authentic leadership style that engages teams and delivers strong results. And it's just that experience that we'll be talking about in this episode. Chris, thanks very much for joining us on Leadership Amplified. I'm really excited to be having this conversation with you today.
Yeah, thanks, Karen. Really appreciate the invite and being here to have a chat to you today as well.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, as I normally do, I'm going to ask you to start off with telling us a bit about your leadership story, when you perhaps first thought about leadership or thought of yourself as a leader, and tell us a little bit about how that leadership has developed throughout your career.
Yeah, well, I think probably the earliest place for me to start would be towards the end of my time at high school and looking for a career path from there. I knew that I wanted to do something technical and working with my hands. So a trade was really what I was looking to get into. And at the time, I had an offer from a Toyota dealership to do an apprenticeship. And I think back in those days, it was about $5 or $6 an hour. And just so happened to walk through, horrendously
The pay.
low. So I happened to walk through the mall up in Darwin at the time where the Defence Force recruiting office was. And I thought, oh, I'll just stick my head in there and have a chat to the recruiters in there and see what options they've got for tradesmen. And so I went through the process with Defence Recruiting and really probably enjoyed the challenge of that initial recruitment process in itself. And then being successful in that, they rang and offered a position, and I think that started at somewhere around $30,000 in those days. So comparing that to the $6 an hour at Toyota, I kind of went, oh, I think I might go with that.
So a couple of just very pragmatic reasons, but not a lot of particular choice. But I am just interested in what you said about the recruitment process, and enjoying that. Not everybody does enjoy a recruitment processes, but what was it about that particular process that you did enjoy?
Being that it was for a technical role, as a tradesman, the recruiting process involved a lot of spatial awareness and mechanical aptitude sort of testing. And I think in the back of my mind, that's what led me to think that I was on the right path doing that testing and enjoying that. I kind of went, well, this is really what I want to be doing. And that helped solidify the decision, I think, a bit for me. So.
Very interesting. So it's an assessment process for them in terms of deciding whether they would choose you, but in a way, it's a confirming and testing process for you going through those activities.
Yeah, it was 100%. Yeah, it worked out really well. So, and then so from there, packed my bags and off I went to the basic recruiting. And that was a real introduction to a different style of leadership than what I'd seen anywhere else previously. And it's a very unique environment because of the risk and the bonds that are formed through the process. The leadership style can be very demanding and fast-paced. So it's almost that do as I say leadership style that doesn't tend to work too well in a corporate environment. But with the trust and the risk in that environment, it works seamlessly. So what I noticed throughout that time, though, was that there was a lot of different ways to wield that kind of leadership. And the ones that really resonated with me were the leaders that were authentic and were themselves. The ones that probably got on a bit of a power trip, you could see that they weren't authentic and it was a facade they were putting on to really push that leadership style on people.
So that's very interesting. And in fact, reading some research about the command and control style, which, it has its place. You're right. If there's not a need for being so commanding, for example, when there are crises or performance problems, then it's not a great style. But it certainly has a particular place. There is some research that confirms just what you've said, that it really depends very much on how the person enacts that style as to the impact that it has on others. And so when you think about people being authentic with that style and that being themselves versus those for whom it's a facade, what were the sorts of things that you picked up and how did they impact you?
I think when that authenticity shines through, you get that connection, the engagement level's a lot higher. So you want to work harder and do better for that type of leader. When you've got the leaders that aren't authentic and they're really pushing hard, not being their genuine selves, it makes it hard to engage with them. And I think, the engagement is really that key piece that comes with that authenticity. And it really led to better group cohesion. And as I said, it was a really high stress environment, lots of pressure. But when you were working with those authentic leaders, there was never a doubt that you could achieve the goal. You always had faith in the team and the leader that you were going to succeed. So it really, really makes for a high performing team.
And so with those leaders for whom that was a facade and a style, that just didn't particularly suit them, could you tell that you weren't going to achieve the goal? What was the difference around actually getting the outcome that, in theory they were seeking, but they had a style that didn't sort of match? Could you tell that you wouldn't get the performance?
You could feel the care factor was a lot lower in the group. It's almost like a hive mentality in that type group. As I said, the bonds are really strong there. So there's a lot of unspoken language as well that comes through naturally. Everybody picks up off everyone else's body language cues. Generally, the mood was a lot lower in those groups with the poor leaders. So.
All right, so that was a part of your early experience seeing this particular style of leadership and then seeing the way people used it very differently. And this was just in your training.
Yeah,
So
correct.
what happened? What happened after that? What else? What other experiences did you have that helped you build your own leadership?
Well, I think those early days really set the tone for me that it's okay to be yourself and be authentic, especially in that military environment. There's a lot of people that will be promoted into a leadership position, and they feel that need to use that command and control
Yeah.
style.
Yeah.
It's almost like two different worlds. Once you finish that initial basic training and move into your regular day job in the army, it's a much lower stress environment when you're in the barracks environment. Obviously different
Yeah.
when you're in the field and in combat and those kinds of things. But that command and control style of leadership isn't required all the time. So,
Yeah.
and that's something I've since found out. Particularly in reading some articles, I think Daniel Goleman's a really good one about
Yeah.
the different styles of leadership
Yeah.
and being able to flex those at different times with different audiences. So that to me was probably something that really resonated, that it's not always a command and control style leadership, or it's not always, a democratic leadership style. You've got to adapt to the individuals, to the situation. And it changes, can change multiple times within a day, depending on, what's happening. So.
Yeah. Well, Daniel Goleman's a favorite of mine, and that, that need to be flexible to figure out what do I need to do here? What's the best way that I can engage? Just makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, and I think that article from Daniel Goleman really cemented that philosophy for me.
Yeah.
Probably one of the articles that's resonated with me the most.
Yeah. Fantastic. That's great. Okay, so you're out in the, out of the training, and you're into a kind of a normal life doing your trade. How did you start to develop your own leadership?
Initially in the army, there was quite a an informal network of leadership as well. So without being officially promoted, there was always that, if you knew more than someone else, you shared that knowledge. You didn't try and hang on to it and protect yourself with that knowledge, so to speak. It was all about sharing that knowledge with the group as quickly as possible and helping the newer guys get up to speed. And when I first started, I had a couple of guys that really did that for me, and looked after me. So then it became something for me to continue on and pay forward when I had the opportunity to do the same as well. So, and then likewise, since leaving the military and moving into commercial workshops and more leadership roles in corporate organisations, it's a similar kind of mentality that I bring, that I don't want to hang on to all the knowledge that I've got. I want to share that with my team and make sure they're prepared and capable to take over my role should anything happen to me.
Yeah. And so just going back to this, the Goleman idea of styles and the focus in the military on more of the command and control styles, what are the sorts of styles that you've seen more of in the corporate and commercial world?
I've definitely seen some command and control style as well. But I think, the collaborative approach, and I'm really struggling with some of the terminology that Daniel Goleman used now, but bringing that authenticity through and being your true self, and engaging with your team, is something that I've seem work really well. And I think, that really fosters strong engagement and you get really good results from that style. I've seen some really poor leadership styles as well. Some real conflict avoidance style leadership. Especially when they're in a senior position, it makes it hard as a middle manager or a supervisor to follow through with any planning or goals that you've set if you're not getting that support when there is conflict. So, but I mean, it's not uncommon. I think there's a lot of people that are conflict avoidant and that tends
Yes,
to lead
that's
to
right.
really poor results.
And Chris, this is one of the funny things that I sometimes think about, this whole idea of being authentic. I mean, I'm still interested in knowing a bit more about your career and your journey, but this idea, if someone is naturally conflict avoidant, in a sense, that's being their authentic self if they
Yes.
avoid conflict. So how do you see the idea that, how do you think about that and authentic leadership as something to aspire to?
Courage is probably the word I'd use most to describe that, I guess, that you've got to have that courage to have those hard discussions. And I don't think anybody likes having hard discussions that bring conflict, but having that courage to sit down with someone and discuss their performance issues or whatever the issue may be, in a calm yet supporting manner, really takes a lot of courage. And if you do it right, I think people on the receiving end can generally accept that, and work with you to deliver a solution. And probably key to that as well is that engagement piece. If someone's not authentically caring about the individual and their performance, it would make it a much, to be very transparent that it wasn't genuine.
So that authenticity is sounds to me that it's very much about, I see you, Chris, as a human being. I care about you. I'm interested in what you do and how you do it, and I'm here to help you, maybe to challenge as well. But it's not just about fronting up and bringing my personality with my, good sides and my little quirks into the leadership role. I mean, to me, that's almost a lazy kind of leading. That sort of accept me as I am, which is quite different from the authenticity style that you're talking about.
And I think that also needs to be part of it, though. In being a leader that's authentic, you need to allow people that psychological safety to come to work and be their authentic selves.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting language issue in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thinking about what does authenticity mean, being real, yes, leaving space for people, so there's it's important to talk about that and to acknowledge that and to do that, and you can only do that by being an authentic human. But on the other hand, we're also perhaps saying that you need to be, let's say, a human in progress. So that you're also, and Daniel Goleman would certainly talk about this, aware of your strengths and the way that you interact with others, and have a focus on developing yourself so that you're, improving what you do with others and how you lead others.
Yeah, correct. I agree. Yeah. And personally, I think I'm not a huge fan of conflict either.
Who is, yeah.
But I probably, like you said, I identified that that was an area that I needed to work on, and rather than avoiding little issues that then became bigger issues, I really pushed myself hard to have those hard conversations early, and try and catch those little things before they got any bigger.
And that makes it, easier to face into the challenge of conflict, doesn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
So tell us about what was the first formal leadership role that you had when you became a manager of a group of people.
So my first role outside the army was a workshop supervisor role in a commercial workshop, and that was running a team of probably close to 30 staff across two shifts, and that was quite a step up from the small, close, tight-knit teams that I'd worked with in the army previously. And probably the first thing I noticed was that the goal, I suppose, in the military is quite clear. Everyone understands their role, what they've got to do, how to do it. And everyone's working together in the same direction. Moving into that organization directly afterwards was, I can't think of an apt way to describe it, but almost like walking into a circus without a ringmaster.
Right, that sounds apt, certainly descriptive.
Yeah, so there was a lot of people there who had good and genuine intentions and wanted to do the best thing by the business. And probably from a lack of clarity or instruction, weren't aligned to the overall goals of the business. So that was a really good learning curve for me, getting everybody to work towards a common goal and making sure everyone understood the part they played. Yeah, so that was quite an interesting role to get some people on board, and there were some people there that just didn't want to do the right thing. Again, that was probably part of that journey in working through conflict avoidance and really understanding that letting that stuff bubble away really has a detrimental effect in the long run. So.
If I was one of those 30 or so people who were working in the workshop, what would I have, how would I have described your leadership?
And I think it grew along the way. So I think initially, as I said, there was that shock from working in a really cohesive team to coming into one that wasn't cohesive at all. But so that initial period was probably quite difficult. And there was a bit of a feeling out period in my leadership style, and I tended to revert to that command and control a little bit in the early days. But at the same time, I was working on a lot of engagement at an individual level with all the people to try and understand them, their concerns, and what they thought were the biggest issues that we were facing. So I guess collaborative or engaged would be one of the words that they'd use.
How would they talk about the command and control bit?
I'd hope that they'd see that some of it was necessary.
In the environment that you talked about, if there was a, a circus without a ringmaster, it sounds like a little bit of that, de decisive clarity, was necessary.
Yeah, and when I say that command and control style, I'm not a yeller and a screamer in the workplace. I've never believed in that, having a place outside of the military. So whilst they were very stern discussions, it was never about berating anyone in front of their peers or anything like that. It was just very direct conversations with people that probably weren't used to such direct conversations.
Yes, fantastic, because that is really what command and controlling leadership is. I mean, yelling and shouting is yelling and shouting. Being commanding means being super clear about what it is we have to do, how we have to do it. That sounds like the authentic commanding, controlling leaders in the army that you experienced. That doesn't have to be kind of brutal. It doesn't have to be rude. It can be a bit tough, but it doesn't have to be loud either.
No, that's right.
Unless you're in, well, perhaps a military situation, or if you're in a situation where you can see there's, some kind of physical accident about to happen, you might want to yell. Might want to move. But for the rest of the time, I think this is a challenge that some managers face when they think about that need to be commanding, to take command, to be in control, that they can often take that a little bit too far, and so they raise their voice and become too dominant. So I really like that distinction that you've drawn about how you needed to do that, and then in the context where there was a need for some clarity. Let's be clear.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head there.
Okay, so
I was going to say the yelling and screaming tends to probably be detrimental to any relationships you're gonna build with people. So.
Yeah, we certainly hope not to hear too much of that around. Okay, so that's your first experience of leadership. What happened after that?
So I moved from there into some larger fleet organisations in the fleet management space. And that was a really unique opportunity for me in that when I began that journey, it was with quite a small team
Right.
and we had some really rapid growth with plans at looking at bringing a lot of our maintenance internally instead of relying on contractors. So we went to market and hired probably in the vicinity of 15 people. The beauty of that, and as I've learned probably a little bit later in life, so the beauty at the time was that it was my team. And I sat in on every interview, hired every person. And as I touched on, doing a bit of education later in life, I've sort of realized that that probably wasn't the best way to do things because the demographic and experience of people was quite narrow. The diversity probably wasn't as good as it could have been. But at the time it worked really well for me and we got some really good results really quickly out of that team. So that was a really good opportunity for me.
I mean, I guess it depends really very much on the task and what you need to do as to how much diversity you need in the group of people. We know that diversity in a general sense is good for creativity and innovation, and also in terms of kind of social reasons and skills. But depending on what the work is, if you've got a really clear, outcome and focus on what you need to achieve, and you don't need to mess around with it for a while, then having very similar people can actually be useful in increasing the efficiency. It really just depends on the sort of work that you've got, and you sound like you got that sort of first cut advantage from doing that.
And it was exactly as you said that we were up and running very quickly and getting results very quickly as well. So it was a very experienced and militant probably fleet company. Very set in their ways. They had very strong processes and policies. So it worked very well for us. In that initial setup phase. So, that went really well. So,
And then what happened next?
from there, I made my way across to Melbourne, I started with a another retail workshop, commercial workshop here in Melbourne, and again came into a team that probably needed a bit of engagement and nourishing, I guess, probably is one of the better words to use for them.
I think it's a good work.
Really, really good team, really good group of people. Handful of long-term employees that have been with that company for a very long period of time. And seeing some of those team members be able to flourish was probably the best reward in that team. And again, I found that the engagement piece was the easiest way to work through some of the issues there. And we instigated a monthly sit down meeting with all the employees, and I think I picked that one up from a colleague who called them campfire sessions. And so we'd do things like get a coffee truck in and Everyone would get a coffee and we'd sit down and just talk about any strategic objectives we had coming up over the next 3 to 6 months in the initial phase, and then we'd work through right down to day-to-day issues that were causing grievances with the guys on the floor. And I think that level of two-way communication really built strong ties in the team, and especially back to myself as a leader. The team there would share any issues they had immediately, which was good that they felt like they could get a resolution very quickly. So,
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Just as a slight aside though, if we think about the current circumstances, and I'm not sure how much sort of hybrid working you're doing where you are now, but if you reflect back on the sorts of sessions you might have with a coffee truck or some kind of, notional campfire where everyone's together, how are you doing those things now? Are they, would you still do that? Do you still do that in the work that you do now?
yeah, the role I'm in currently, I don't have any direct reports, so
Oh, right.
I've kind of
It's almost
landed.
like you've gone back to front. You've started early on with the biggest group of people and have fewer people now. That's well managed.
Yeah, that's how I sort of ended up. But I've been pretty lucky through the whole COVID scenario to maintain on-site working. And I think that suits my style of leadership. So when I've got a team that I want to engage with, I really think it's invaluable to do that face to face. Probably looking back at some time at another employer where I was looking after a number of workshops nationally, we actually had to go into New South Wales in the height of COVID to roll out a new ERP system, and I think it was quite a unique experience. So myself and some members from HR team went, and the project team for the rollout of the ERP as well. But it was almost as if you could see the relief on the faces of the team in New South Wales when some people from head office were coming through to support them in this project. And we had to jump through quite a lot of hoops to get that done, and it did cost us a fair bit of money, but I think the reward for that again was the engagement of the team and the connection that we forged with the team in New South Wales to show them that despite the challenges that we've got going on at the moment, we'll do everything we can to support you and help you through a difficult period in rolling out a new computer program.
And so it sounds like that's been kind of a hallmark across your career, this the importance of getting face to face with people, having open conversations, making sure people know where they're going, what they're doing, but also giving them a chance to I guess give feedback to you and ask you questions.
Yeah, and I often speak to my team and ask them to challenge my thinking as well. Often I do come up with ideas that can be a little crazy, and I definitely like to have those sanity checked by the people that they're going to affect, and just make sure that it makes sense on more levels than my brain. And I think that's invaluable as well, being open with your team and allowing them to challenge your thought processes. And it drives that collaboration piece as well.
Yeah, fantastic. And so to summarize now, because we have talked a bit about your leadership career and we've talked a bit about authenticity along the way, is there anything else you would like to add in terms of your thinking about authentic leadership and why it's important and how to do it?
Well, and I think as you challenged me with the language on authenticity, I think it's probably as we touched on, a combination of being your true self, but then bringing that courage to have those tough conversations with people that are uncomfortable and are not enjoyable, but if you have them early and openly, then the issues will be dealt with a lot sooner, and the end result's going to be a lot better for everybody involved.
And one of the things that you talked about, and I know we've talked about previously, is the importance of learning and being open to continue to learn along your career. And you've, again, there have been little smatterings of that in this conversation, but I am aware that, you're doing your MBA and just about finished.
Yes, one more unit to go and I'll be finished.
Yeah, well,
But
congratulations.
thank you. That learning piece for me is huge. It has taken me a while to work my way through the MBA, but I made that decision several years ago that I needed to pursue something like that, just to challenge myself and grow as a leader. And there's been some moments throughout that where I've had some real aha moments. But likewise, there's been some real confirmation moments where you'll read an article like a Daniel Goleman or something like that, and it just makes so much sense and confirms the thoughts or the behaviors that you're trying to portray as a leader. So I think that's really, really good, and I'd recommend it to everybody to look at further education as part of their leadership journey.
And I mean, what do you really hope to gain from the learning in terms of your career?
I think for me, it was more of a personal decision to pursue the MBA, in a way of looking to challenge myself personally. So I don't have career outcomes linked to completing the MBA, but I think the personal feeling of fulfillment and success of completing that is probably more why I did it. But as I said, there's been those real aha moments throughout that I've taken those learnings, or I've had a conversation with somebody in a different industry to myself, and it's really opened my eyes to the value of diversity, as we touched on earlier, that not everyone has the same upbringing, not everybody has the same capabilities, and really being open to that and just thinking differently has probably been one of the really big things that I've taken out of it.
What's your favorite subject?
Probably leadership. What's that doing,
Good answer. That was the right answer, Chris. We
mate?
didn't line that up in advance, truly.
No, and I think that was probably the one that resonated most with me throughout the process. So that was really good.
And if you had to summarize, I guess, in say a few dot points or a few characteristics for other people who are earlier perhaps in their leadership careers, their leadership journey, what sorts of advice would you give to them? What should they focus on?
I think learning, as we touched on, is a big one. And that can be informal as well as formal. I think through my career, I learnt a lot from poor leadership, probably as much as, if not more than I learnt from good leaders. So And it's very hard at the time to have a poor leader and think of it as a learning opportunity, but probably store it all in the back of your mind until you're in a different position and a different place, and you can appreciate the learning opportunity that you have.
That's such a common experience, actually, and it is usually, a few years down the track or at, some later point in your career that you can see the learning, but it certainly shapes how you think about yourself and what you do at the time.
Yeah, 100%. I think it does. Yeah, and probably one of the other things I think touching on that authenticity, and I think you briefly touched on it earlier, that treat people as people, and I think you'll go a long way as a leader. That if you treat your people as people, they'll work very hard for you.
Okay, so they're two great pieces of advice. Stay open to learning, always learn, and be authentic. You want to leave it there, or is there anything else you want to add?
Have fun.
Oh, have fun.
Probably the other one. And again, when you're in a position with a poor leader and things aren't going well, it's very hard to have fun. But take the small wins along the way. Like I said, with some of the teams that I've had the opportunity to work with or build over time, seeing some personal satisfaction from people enjoying coming to work as a result of what you're putting in and doing every day. It's making life easier and happier for other people. So if you can do that, regardless of what's happening with your direct boss or, the CEO of the company or whatever, just if you can take those small wins along the way and just enjoy them while they're there.
That sounds like some very great advice, some very wise advice. Simple but very hard to do, isn't it? That whole idea that people just enjoy coming to work each day and that as a leader, you've got some responsibility in that.
Yeah, and it is very rewarding when you'll have those people that when you started a business they don't want to be there, and after a year or two you speak to them and they say, "Oh, I love coming to work every day."
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Well done. All right. Well, Chris, thank you very much for taking the time to have this conversation. It's been a delight speaking with you.
Thanks, Karen. I really enjoyed it as well. It was really good.
Lovely. Thank you.